25 years after the original series of murders in Woodsboro, a brand new ghost face emerges and Sidney Prescott must return to uncover the truth. Hello, everybody. My name is Jim. I am one of your co-hosts on tonight's show where we are jumping straight into Scream, the brand new movie that just came out this weekend. And we are very, very privileged to have somebody who has actually connected to the Scream franchise on our show with us tonight. His name is Nate Reagan. We'll let him introduce himself in just a second. But before we do, he is known for his work on this film, plus Scream 4, Unknown Dimension, the story of paranormal activity, which I can't wait to see, and Hell House LLC, the third Lake of Fire, which came out in 2019. Nate, welcome to the Scare Guy Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
We are so stoked to have you on the show. But who else do we have with us tonight? Let's start up here with Cheeseman.
Hey, it's Cheeseman here with ScareGuy.com, social media director and screenwriter.
Charlie.
Hi, Charlie Hoover, independent filmmaker, director, writer, and editor.
And our favorite guy from the Midwest, Jake.
Hey, everybody. It's Jake from the Jacoba System here, coming at you from Ohio. Thanks for having me on. I'm always ready to talk about horror and Scream and all the stuff we all love. So,
all right. Well, to help kick us off in our Scream Fest, me and Charlie and Luke, we saw it opening night, 8 o'clock over at Universal Studios. Jake, I'm sure we've all seen it. Nate, yeah. You've seen it. Nate, did you get an early cut of it, or did you see it?
I saw it Thursday night.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's what I saw it too. Yeah.
We'll talk about our first impressions in just a second, but I want to first of all let's get to know Nate for a second. Nate, you are kind of intimately involved with the Scream franchise. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, basically, you know, it's obviously my favorite horror franchise of all time. It's probably my favorite movie franchise of all time, even though I love all types of movies. You know, saw the original in theaters when it came out in 96 and I was just blown away by it. I thought it was amazing. And just, you know, followed it through its history. Right after Scream 3 came out, I was able to acquire one of the Ghostface costumes and masks that was used in the film directly from the stuntman.
Nice.
It was, yeah, way before like prop collecting was even like a big thing. So I had that for all these years and never really knew too much about it, just that it was very different from what was available in stores. So by the time Facebook came around, I decided, you know, I'm going to start finding people that worked on the film and kind of see if anybody has anything else or ask them questions about what I already have. And so that got me just really closely, friendships with a lot of the crew that were involved in the film, mostly like props and wardrobe. And then whenever Scream 4 was announced, Anthony Massey, of Massey Media, he was doing a retrospective documentary on the trilogy. And, I had read about it online and just reached out to him and was like, hey, I'd love to be involved and help somehow. So he brought me on as like a researcher and he interviewed me and I was really involved in that. And then, I ended up helping with Scream 4 as a creative consultant to help like make sure Ghostface looked right. And it had been like 11 years since they made a Scream film. And so they didn't have any of this stuff anymore. They didn't have like the original masks or the costumes, but the prop master Skip Crank, he knew that I had all this stuff because I got a lot of it from him. So I was able to help them out with that. And yeah, ever since then, it's just kind of been one thing after another with Anthony and then now the new film.
So nice. for those of you who may not know who he's talking about, Anthony Massey, he's a friend of the show. He's been on a few different times. And were you involved with the big Scream events that he hosted up at the actual house where they filmed the original Scream?
Yes. Yeah. So Scream Comes Home in 2019 and then Scream-a-ween in 2020. It was Massey Media and it was Anthony and I together that did that. That was pretty much just, I'd always been fascinated with filming locations in general and visiting them and tracking them down. And one day somebody just sent me a picture of Stu's house from the movie, and there was like a wedding going on in front of it. And I was like, someone got married at Stu's house. They're like, yeah, it's like a wedding venue now. You can like rent it out. And I'm like, oh, if you could rent it, I wonder if they'd do a Scream event. So I called Anthony immediately and was like, what do you think about throwing a party at the house? And he's like, let's do it. So it just kind of got put in motion, and we did a Kickstarter for it and raised $65,000.
Nice.
We throw this massive party and basically recreate the party scene from the movie. Mm-hmm. And screen the film there. Roger Jackson was a guest, and yeah, it was a blast.
Well, I know, I remember it was a, which year was it? 20, was it 2020, right? No, 2019. Is that when the most recent one was? I've seen, if you go to Anthony's page, he's got the pictures from the event on his Facebook page right now. I was trying to load those in, but it tells me that I have too many photos loaded in loaded right now as we're going to go through tonight. So I can't really load that photo in. Maybe after I know Luke's going to share some photos with us as we go through, but before we, and maybe we can like cut a couple out as we go through, but
I actually have this just chilling right here. That's
let's look
perfect.
At
oh, that's cool.
That's the picture I was getting ready to pull out. Yeah.
That's everybody that attended in front of the house.
Yeah. That's awesome. So cool. That is awesome. So, do you guys have what else is in the works?
So as far as
that you can talk about,
yeah. So as far as events go, we've been working on doing one for My Bloody Valentine 3D,
wow, which
was filmed out here in Pennsylvania. So we're in all the filming locations. It's kind of like one of those perfect things. We've looked into doing a lot of other events like that. A lot of times what we find is like the locations are really spread apart. Like Scream 2, it was like half filmed in Georgia and half filmed in California, so that didn't really work. But My Bloody Valentine, they're all within like 30 minutes of each other. They're all super close. The mine that they shot in is already like a tourist attraction. You can just tour it for like historical purposes. everything's still there and it all looks the same. So we're working on that right now. And yeah, as far as other projects go, obviously we just had completed and released the Unknown Dimension documentary about the making of the Paranormal Activity movies. And Anthony and I are also involved in the remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is still
early stages.
Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. Hey, by the way, I did upload this picture right here.
That's
the picture you were showing us. If those of you are watching this, there is the photo in front of this was, where is the house at now?
Santa Rosa, California.
Okay. Santa Rosa, California. That's awesome. Do you guys have any questions before we jump into Talk and Scream? Cause I know Jake and Luke, their friendship kind of bonded over Scream.
Yeah.
I got him in trouble cause I gave him a copy of it.
Hey, wait, one more picture. This is inside the house, right?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, wow.
From that same event. This is off of Anthony's page. Look, there's ghost face right up there at the top.
Nice.
Oh, man, I wish I could have made it up to that event.
Yeah, we're trying to get back to that. We're trying to do another one there. It's just that, you know, with it being – so it's kind of like the owner, he actually lives there, but he also has a bunch of other properties. So anytime it's rented out for, like, a wedding or something, they just go and stay somewhere else. But it's constantly booked. And then like Paramount did a bunch of promotional stuff at the house leading up to this new movie, like photo shoots with David and stuff. So it just kind of like, it's been really hectic for him. And he's just kind of like, I just need a break for a little bit, but I think we'll end up going back.
Awesome. And by the way, for those of you who are listening, we are right now, we're talking to Nate Reagan. He is involved in the production of some very cool horror thing documentaries that we just talked about. We'll make sure that we list those on the website. But he also is going to share. He was involved with the production of the most recent Scream film. And he's as far as like props and Scream News props. So we're gonna talk to him about that in just a second. But also Scream 4. You were involved with Scream 4 as well, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Nice.
Same kind of stuff, like props and stuff.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, speaking of props, before we jump into talking about this film, we would love if you could share anything there that the fans are just going to love to see.
Yeah, I got some stuff picked out here. I got like a little mixture just so you got a little bit of everything. Uh-huh. So like this mask here, for example, this is from the fourth film.
Nice.
It's a really pristine, still in really good shape. It's kind of one of my favorite looking masks.
Ooh. Yeah.
And then that's this so one, cool. Little bit yellowed because it's so old, but this is like the main mask worn by the killer in Scream 2.
Wow. Get out of town. That's awesome. Nice.
It's actually was it's signed to the plot master from Wes Craven. So it was gifted to him, and now I have it. So, that's like the main mask from Scream 2.
Now, was it kind of aged like that, where it had some of the scuffs and all that you can kind of see on it?
Yeah. And they do a lot of stuff to the mask, like for the film, like to make the eyes like darker so you can't see the person's eyes underneath.
Right. They had,
like, darker eye mesh. And then what happens is, you know, it looks fine on screen, but 10, 15 years later, that glue that they use starts to, like, bleed through and kind of makes it, like, dark around the eyes there. So, like, that wouldn't have been on film, but because it's aged and it's starting to soak into the latex, it looks a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I kind of like the aged look, though. You know,
Kind of like
they did the Halloween mask.
That's cool.
Nice. You'll probably recognize this from Scream 3.
Oh, yeah.
Trophy that is the head broken off.
trying to tape the head back on.
Exactly. I don't know what happened to the head.
So for those who are just listening, can you describe what you're holding?
Yeah, so this is Roman Bridger's music video award from Scream 3 that's on his desk in the scene when Jenny McCarthy is in his office, like, waiting for him to arrive, but it's not really him. And she's messing with this trophy and drops it, and the head breaks off, and she tries to tape it back on. And then after she's killed, there's a scene where Roman's holding it, saying, "I'm going to be the next victim. You think this wasn't a message?" And holds the trophy up. But yeah, so I have that I brought out. And then this back here, this is one of the masks from the new film.
Nice.
Yeah. Sweet.
Nice.
And it's like the hood on it's really like they modified the hoods. They put their own hoods on them. And it just kind of, again, kind of like a temporary modification. So it worked fine on film, but over time it starts to like kind of separate from the mask. So that's why I have it in like the bag. Nice. But yeah, so this is one of the masks that the killer wears in the new film. And then something kind of small here, but this is actually the costume designer from the new film, and she didn't work on any of the previous ones. So she came into a completely new. This is her original like sketch.
Nice.
That's so cool.
Her interpretation of the costume.
That's so awesome. Cool.
What was the story with, I'm sure you probably know, with the first movie, there were two different masks that had a slight difference. Like the one had like kind of like a bigger forehead almost. Is that?
Yeah. So basically the script just described the killer as wearing a ghost mask and nothing else. So they were just trying to find the right mask. They tried to make their own version, could never figure it out. And then Wes and the producer Marianne Maddalena found what ended up being the mask at one of the houses when they were location scouting, and it was, you know, like a Fun World mask that makes the mask. But they couldn't get a hold of the company because Fun World was just this little tiny company at the time, so they didn't have the rights to use it. So they had K&B FX basically make like a copy of it that was like 30% different. It was just different enough that they wouldn't get sued.
Yeah.
So they made like the eyes bigger and the nose smaller and the mouth smaller. They kind of almost messed with it.
Yeah, it almost like it almost is like less covered by a hood or whatever. It's almost
And it's real tiny. There.
That's the one that's the picture that Luke's showing now is the one that is obviously what became.
Yeah,
as we all know, but I should have you guys look up a picture of that. There's two scenes in the first movie that you really see it, and the one is at the beginning when he's chasing Casey and he stabs her. He's wearing that other style mask, and then when Henry Winkler is wearing it in the school office, it's like the other one. It's just like, and to most people, like casual audience, they're not going to notice, but like if you like see like, well, that's different. Yeah, it's like the eyes are lower or something. It has like a slightly like off look to it. So no, No, sorry. I should
if you literally
those are all the new right there.
Candy face mask, it'll probably come up.
Yeah, look up. Yeah, sorry. I didn't
yeah, basically, they started shooting with that mask, and everybody hated it. Wes hated it. Like, it just doesn't. It's not as scary. I like that one. So they eventually, in the middle of shooting, contacted Fun World and finally got the rights to use that. But they didn't have the money to go reshoot the scenes that they already shot. So that's why you see both versions in the movie.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Speaking of, do you have any other props that you're going to share with us, or should we get going on the movie?
We can get right into it.
All right. We're going to get going. First off, Jake, I know that you and Luke have a special bond over this movie. Let's hear about it.
I just sent you guys an image of the KMB. So if you guys can, I don't know if you guys want to try that. Sorry. Okay. It's interesting to me. I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, Scream, came out when Luke and I were in middle school, I think like sixth grade. And I remember being so excited seeing the trailers and commercials for it and really wanted to see it. But I was only, you know, we were only like 13, so we weren't able to see it in the theater. But my older brother saw it and was like, dude, it's so cool. And he kind of told me about it, kind of spoiled it. He didn't tell me who the killer was, but he's like, there's two killers. It's crazy. It comes out, you know. So then I eventually saw it when I went to my grandma's house one weekend, and she was kind of like, yeah, watch whatever you want, whatever. I'm like, oh, I can get Scream on pay-per-view. Like, yeah, sure, whatever. So that's how I first saw it. And then eventually it was like, okay to rent. My mom was just like, oh, it's fine. It's not the worst. You know, he could be watching worse stuff than Scream, which is just like a murder mystery kind of, you know. So then I had a copied tape from Blockbuster Video, and that was like my version of the film. And then I had to get the uncut version that came out on VHS, which is like the same movie except for like 3 seconds of extra gore at the beginning when Steve, what's the boyfriend's name, when he gets like gutted and they actually show the guts spilling out and stuff. So that was like the big difference. But because I had the one I got from the store, I gave Luke my Blockbuster ripped version, and then his mom was like, where did you get this? How did you? And I was like,
well, it was fine at first, but I kept showing everybody that came over the movie that like hadn't seen it. So like every single weekend I was watching the movie or watching it again. My mom's like, you're watching this too much. And she took it away and hid it from me. But I found it in a drawer. And then later when I was trying to show another friend, I'm like, hey, this friend wants to watch it. Do you mind? I found it or whatever. And she's like, okay, fine, you can watch it this time. And then it never went back in the drawer, and then I just could watch it as much as I wanted.
My mom did the same thing with The Lost Boys, but it was like a taped off TV version of Lost Boys, so it wasn't even like bad. She's like, no, you're not watching that. Like, it's on TV, it's fine, it's like edited. Like, no.
But hey, Jake, here is this is the yeah. photo. This yep. is the photo, yep.
Yeah, so yeah, look how like there's no like hood over the top of the head and stuff, and see how the eyes are lit. I don't know if you can do like a side by side. It's hard to tell when you just look at it on its own.
There's that one. Okay, we can switch back to the other one.
But you can see the other one has like the mouth, the top of the mouth is less. Yeah, see how it's more like one almost solid.
Yeah, yeah.
Line. You okay. know, see, it's just yeah. So it's just weird. Like I noticed that even as a kid, I was like, why does it look different in some scenes? And that's why there's a similar story with Halloween H2O with KMB, yeah, right? Yeah.
They had a several masks for that. They could never get the mask right.
Yeah. And they redid the mask, and then they had one shot that they had to like CGI the new design on it. And it looks really weird when you see it. You're like, oh, what?
All right. Well, listen, we are going to start talking about Scream 2022. I don't know how Scream 5, Scream 2022, whatever we want to call it. But I just want to let everybody know we will be talking spoilers. It's the only way to talk about the film. We will be talking spoilers. We will do 5 minutes spoiler free just for our first impressions. And Nate, I just want to make sure you're associated with the production, but you can talk about it, right?
Yep, awesome. 100%.
I am so excited. But since we have not yet heard from Mr. Charlie Hoover, Charlie, we went to see it on Thursday. It was last second decision. We had a friend. She was going to go see it on Thursday night, and it's her favorite all-time film. We had already bought tickets for Friday night, and then she goes, come with me Thursday. So we all switched our tickets real quick, and I'm glad we did. That was a lot of fun. But Charlie, if you can give me your first spoiler-free impressions of the film.
I had a lot of fun with it. I actually kind of went in with low expectations, just because, you know, with a lot of films today, everything kind of being remade or rebooted or whatever, I was just like, oh, okay, I'm just gonna go have fun, you know, whatever. And I enjoyed it. The movie was a lot better than I thought it was gonna be. Also, the other thing that I really enjoyed about it was the audience. Like, there was just seeing it with an audience was so fun. Like, everybody there, we were all excited about the movie, and we're all just that energy of seeing it with an audience made it really enjoyable. So I laughed a lot more than I thought I would. But then there were those moments where you're like, oh, you know, like, not to give any deaths away or anything like that. But yeah, there were a couple of times where I'm just like, ugh, you know, like, oh,
oh, I know,
doing that thing. But no, it was really fun. And that's the thing that I really like about the Scream franchise, is the kind of the murder mystery aspect to it, and like the whodunit sort of dynamic. And so for me, that kind of is something that, because I'll be honest, like, I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of slasher movies, like horror films. But the thing with Scream, that dynamic makes it really fun for me, because I enjoy like the puzzle aspects of movies like that. And so like really wanting to know what the twist is and who the killer might be or whatever. So no, I enjoyed it. Liked it.
Well, it looks like a lot of people enjoyed it. It made over $34 million opening weekend.
Nice.
In January. That's huge. That's a great opening weekend. It hopefully it bodes well for the future of the Scream franchise. All right, Cheeseman, I haven't heard from you. What do you think? Well, first impressions before we jump into kind of going through the characters and whatnot.
I think it was a fun movie. Like, as you've seen in the trailers, they brought back a lot of the original cast. So, you know, having David Arquette and, you know, Sydney back and Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox, and all that. It was really cool to kind of see those characters come together again, kind of like, you know, like how they've done with some of the Star Wars movies and bringing back, and a lot of throwbacks in the movie you can see, and a lot of bringing back certain things we'll get more into, I think was awesome. And just, you know, and the whole way that, you know, like it references like current culture and movies, it's always kind of, you know, does it dig into like where horror is at now, and then kind of, even of itself, and even with the Stab movies, of even kind of going deeper into that, and then the whole fandom of the Stab movies within the Scream movies, just kind of a real clever thing that they did. So, yeah, it was fun. It's hard to beat the first. I'm sure all of us would kind of agree. And even the second one's still pretty fun. But I mean, I would kind of rate it kind of, I feel like I like the second one better still, but you know, I would say it's better than like the third and definitely the fourth and all that, but it's fun in the whole mix of it though. Like, I mean, you enjoy them all though.
And before we jump to Nate, all right, Jake, give us your take.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I agree with what you guys, a lot of the things you said. I remember when I first heard about it and saw the trailer. You know, I'm Scream, like the original Scream is one of my favorite movies, so of course I'm going to go see it. But I remember being like, oh, wow, they're making another one? Oh, but then I also said the same thing 11 years ago when they made Scream 4, like, oh, okay, that's kind of weird. But yeah, like obviously we'll get into stuff. I had fun, you know, had a couple things where I'm just like, that's an interesting choice. I wonder why they did that. But again, we'll get into that, you know.
Yep. All right, Nate. I would love to hear a professional take. How'd they do? How did they do, in your opinion?
I thought they nailed it. I thought I had a lot of fun with it. I went in with super high expectations just because I just expect like the Scream film to be really, really, really good. You know, I had a lot of issues with the fourth film, had issues with the third film, but overall, like, I don't think there's been a bad Scream film yet. And I think for us to be on part five and it to be still that good was like really impressive, especially with a completely new team involved, which kind of like made a lot of people hesitant, including the original cast that was initially like, oh, I don't know if we want to do this without Wes. It just has to be done right. It has to have the right story. And I think they nailed it.
Yeah, it was good
with it. But, you know, we can get into that.
Yeah, they did. I love that they dedicated the movie to Wes. This one was for Wes, and I think a lot of people were kind of worried without his involvement, what would it be like. But my quick two cents, I thought they nailed it too. And me and Charlie, we were talking afterwards. Some of the best stuff in this movie is when they went meta, and started talking about what did they call this. This was not a reboot. It was not a sequel.
It was a recall.
I think that kind of commentary and talking, because that's when Scream was so good, because I guess the follow-up movies got a little bit, their challenge was a little bit harder because, you know, the first one was so simple. Do you like scary movies? What's your favorite? And then you live or die by the rules of a scary movie. And I thought they kind of kept it going they kept that conceit going pretty well. But this one, it was really cool. The way you come back and you live or die by the rules of, is it the rules of a sequel or a reboot or some, I forgot what the rules they were going by. Cause there were three rules that Dewey gave them. And oh man, I'm going to forget those right now, but I'm talking about how great it was. And now I can't even remember it. You know, like rule number one,
always, like don't trust the love interest or something.
Don't trust the love interest. Yeah. Rule number two. So those were great. Yeah. All right. So for those of you who are listening or watching and you don't want any spoilers, we are about to jump into spoilers. So you have 5 seconds to turn it off. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, let's talk spoilers, guys. So let's go ahead and open up our discussion. The movie, somebody kind of walk us through this. Scream is known for its opening segments. It's the movie that popularized the big opening kill. Jake, what do you think? Walk us through a little bit the opening kill of the movie.
Well, that was the thing. There actually wasn't an opening kill.
Exactly.
That was a
spoiler.
Yeah. We're getting into the spoilers. Attack.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember Scream 4 too, because they opened Scream 4 similar in the house, but then wasn't that like a part of a movie or something they were watching?
Yeah, there was like two fake out
openings. Yeah, yeah.
Stab 7.
Yeah,
and then it was the real opening.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. Obviously, they want to, you know, pay homage to the original and stuff. So it was interesting to see that as an updated, you know, 2021, 2022 version, where, you know, what would happen if this happened nowadays? So like, and everyone watching the movie, like when Ghostface is making her do the game and saying like, find that, I'm just like, okay, you're on the landline, pick up your phone and just look up the thing. And then of course she does it, like, yeah, that's like, that makes sense, you know. And like,
he's talking about the character of Tara Carpenter. She was the very first person we see. She was played by Jenna Ortega in the film, so she was our quote-unquote Drew Barrymore stand-in, our Jada Pinkett Smith stand-in. She was the first quote-unquote not kill. All right,
right, so it just shows, like, you know, modern day, like how technology could help you in situations like that, even though it kind of backfires with Ghostface having access to the security system and stuff, which they never really explained how that, you know, did they ever explain how he was able to do that? I don't know.
Yeah. They talked about he cloned somebody's phone.
Oh, okay.
So it's just kind of like, okay, he hacked it somehow, but I liked that dynamic too.
Yeah.
Playing with the modern security stuff.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. You know, you watch a lot of these old movies and, like, you know, a movie like Home Alone, it's like that could never happen because nowadays they just like grab a cell phone call or whoever, you know. So it's like, you know, nice to see an updated version of that. But yeah, that's the big fake out, is that you're expecting this like horrible kill, but then as the scene goes on, they're like, she survived, she's in the hospital, like, oh, okay, they're going a different way now, you know. So big spoiler happens pretty early on in the film, actually. And, you know, one of the things these movies have is the theme of family, some kind of connection, you know. So in Scream 2, the killer was Billy's mom. And then in Scream 3, it was Sydney's half-brother. So there's always some kind of connection. So you're expecting that to be the end, the killer. But you find out that the main girl, the actress in the film, her character is Billy, one of the killers from the first movie, his daughter.
Yep.
That he hooked up with another girl in high school, and not that wasn't her. Sorry.
All right. Yeah, there's a million yeah. pictures here. I don't, sorry.
But yeah, they're introducing a new plot line we hadn't known about, where he got another girl pregnant and then she finds out that she is his daughter. So there's, she's having these, psychotic, visions of him. And that was the big surprise. I didn't know that Skeet Ulrich was going to be in the movie. So then when she like looks up in the mirror and he's standing there and he looks like how he does at the end of the first one, the same blood splatters and stuff. I was like, oh my God, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't know if he just naturally still looks like that or if they like de-aged him or something, but it was crazy. He looked exactly like how he looked at the end of that movie.
No, this right here, for sure.
But he's in decent shape and everything, so I'm sure they didn't have to do too much crazy stuff. And with all the deep fake stuff out now,
right,
and the how good stuff's getting, they're doing a really good job. Even like you'll see like the deep fake Tom Cruise that they've been doing on like, you know, on all the TikTok and Instagram stuff looks pretty spot on. So we're in a good place for de-aging.
So that was really cool to have that surprise early on in the film. And then Sam has to reveal to her sister, who was the one who got attacked at the beginning, that, you know, she is Billy's daughter. And because she found out that she kind of resulted in the dad leaving because he found out
about her.
And then
let's slow down right there. Let's just kind of unpack that just a little bit. So because that is a lot of explanation to have to explain.
Right.
But just real quick before we move away from the beginning, it was interesting how they used like, you know, the modern technology with like text messaging and with video stuff of like, had this existed back in the first one, because they actually brought Steve's body into it all tied up and did all that, which actually kind of the in-person, you know, works better as a filmmaker in some ways. But because of the technology there, he could just be like, oh, I'm going to attack your friend Amber right now and just send a video verse bringing someone all the way there. So it was interesting, how they, you know, brought in the modern texting, and if there are future films, how they'll bring in that technology as well. And, you know, a big part of the opening scenes is like the movie trivia and all that. But then this one was unique because it kind of like, we're going to do movie trivia, but it's within the Stab universe of like our own kind of like movie thing. And it was asking, who the actors were in the first film. So that was interesting how they opened it up.
Yeah, that's what it was. David Arquette, when they went to see him, because he had survived the first few, you know, rampages of the killers, he was telling them, here's the rules for surviving a Stab movie instead of just a horror movie. Don't trust the love interest. I think somebody in the chat said, somebody in the comments said one of them was, don't say I'll be right back. I think that's true. I think that might be but anyways, so Nate, in your opinion, how did they handle the opening act one of this? You know, Scream is known for their act ones. How did this one stand up?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was the best one since part two. Mm-hmm. I love that we got the kind of non-menacing Roger Jackson voice that starts, which we haven't really had since the first Scream. I guess in Scream 2, when he calls Cece, it kind of starts non-threatening, but I love that. Yeah, the call to Tara was very, very reminiscent of the original Scream, where it starts out innocent enough, and you know the guy's like a little creepy, but maybe he's a nice guy, and he's just, you know, normal, and then it kind of slowly goes into, you know, menacing and threatening. Whereas like Scream 3 and 4, it's like every call with Ghostface was like the second they answer the phone, he's already like, I'm going to cut you like a fish, and just, you know, just immediately scary. So I like that build up. And I did like the trivia being about Stab, because it again, super meta. It's almost like, as a Scream fan, the character in Scream 5 is being quizzed about Scream 1, essentially.
here's the question. Who played the first kill in the first Stab movie?
Right.
Answer?
Heather Graham.
I just thought that was so awesome. I love that part. Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought they did really good, and I did like that, you know, they went a different route. There's always been two opening victims. There was only one, and, you know, she didn't die, which obviously we find out later was intentional. But I just thought it was, you know, we've had four openings already with two victims that are killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was like a fresh take to do it, you know, to do something different. And I thought it worked.
Nice. The thing that was interesting about the marketing in the film, the poster that came out before the film says the killer is on this poster. It's one of, I think we have right here. The killer is here. You will see the killer. And that's what's so cool. And I'm so glad they stuck to the formula that makes Scream so great. It's a murder mystery. It's mm-hmm. a comedy horror murder mystery all the way through. And the thing though, that was a little bit, if I could say something that I was worried about, and was that there were, when I first saw the poster, there's so many characters. And I want to ask you guys, how do you think they did? Cause they almost had like dual narratives going on. It wasn't just one story. It was the legacy cast were having their story. And for a while, but there was this brand new cast, the passing of the baton. How well did we pass the baton? Did they pass the baton to a new generation of Scream victims? How well did they do that? And were you satisfied with how much the legacy characters were there versus how much they weren't there? I'd love to have a little bit of conversation there.
I would have liked to see more with the legacy characters. I know that's the trend now. Like you look at Ghostbusters, Star Wars, it's like, we'll have them in, but they're just kind of there for a little bit, you know, focus mm-hmm. more on the other people. It was cool that they had some of those people connected to the other people, like Randy, his niece and nephew, like that character, those characters are great. Those are like my favorite characters in the movie.
I know they were fantastic. Yeah. The twins.
Yeah. The twins. Yeah. They were so good. And then obviously the connection with Sam and Billy.
Here's the twins from Scream.
Nice. Yeah, they were great.
And they were, how were they related?
They're Randy, the nerdy guy from the first movie, Jamie Kennedy's character. Yep. That's his niece and nephew. So it's his sister's kids. she had a cameo because she was in Scream 3, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the one she was in? Yeah. So that was cool to see her come back. And I can't think of her name, the actress. But she's, yeah, there you go.
Martha Meeks.
Yep. Nice. Okay. So, yeah, it was cool that they connected. That scene, we'll get into that later. That's the scene that they do in the new one that is a reference of that. And it's like three times Inception, you know. It's like, it was so fun.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. For those of you just listening, he just showed a picture of Randy on the couch with Ghostface behind him while Randy was watching Halloween. And describing the rules of how not always look behind you, you know.
So in their world, that's their real uncle who died that way, and then they made a movie about it that they're then watching that scene, and then it's happening to her like as she's like watching that. So it's like, that was really clever.
Cool, cool. What do you think, Charlie? Did they legacy versus the OG screamers versus the new screamers?
Yeah, no, I thought it was cool. I mean, obviously, Dewey is like the linchpin when it comes to the legacy characters. His connection with Sydney and Gail. So he's that, you know, without him, they didn't really have any logical way into the story, but they were able to do it in a way that everything made sense. So I appreciated that. And yes, I guess spoilers, you know,
we can spoil it. We're in spoiler territory.
Yeah, he dies. And
oh, wait. Let's not talk about Dewey dying just yet. We're going to.
Oh, okay.
But we will.
I thought it was neat. I mean, for me, it made sense. So, I mean, for me, it was just kind of like a big, you know, like stuff like that. I care about like the logic of a story and it not being contrived. So I appreciated how everything had it felt pretty natural towards cause and effect relation to the plot and the characters. So
I was going to say, this is a quick little detail. Did you guys notice in his house on the shelf, he has like a wooden box and it had a little, name tag, nameplate on it. And it said Tatum. So it must be like Tatum, his sister's ashes, Rose McGowan's character from the first movie.
Oh, okay,
yeah, I noticed that they had like a little gold plate.
There's so many fun like little Easter eggs in this. Yeah. There were a couple that I missed the first time I saw it. And then when I went back, I saw it when I saw it the second time.
I saw that. I was like, oh, that's cool. That's
there's a nice so many.
Yeah, even in Elm Street, like I missed that. There was an Elm Street in there.
And then one of the characters' last name is Carpenter. And obviously the one, you know, Randy's nephew's name, Wes, or not Randy, officer or Sheriff Judy's son is named Wes, you know.
Wes, so it's always, yeah.
Did you catch the Kirby reference cameo thing?
What was it?
When they're watching the Stab 8 clip on YouTube on the tablet, if you look over to the column beside it, there's a little, it's a recent picture of Hayden Panettiere, and it's an interview with Woodsboro Massacre
survivor. Cool. Nice.
From Michigan, from That's cool. The other one that I didn't catch literally was when Dewey and Gail kept asking Sydney how her husband's doing, how's Mark? It's Mark Kincaid from Scream 3, Detective.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't catch. Yeah, nice.
That makes sense. All right. Nate, how do you think? I mean, interweaving the two stories, OG versus the new characters, did they do a good balance? Did you want more? Did you want less? What do you think?
I mean, I'll always take more of the legacy characters just because they're the ones, you know, we grew up watching and, you know, love. I thought they did a really good job with it. And as far as, like, where they are, I thought that more so than Scream 4, this one did a much better job at, showing you where these characters would be at this point in their life. That was one of my issues with Scream 4, was there were just some of the way the characters acted and the phases that they were at in that time in their life, that makes sense, just didn't kind of seemed off to me. But in this one, I think that it all felt right to me, like where Dewey's at, where Gail's at, where it just all felt like, yeah, that's probably where these characters would be today.
Right.
I love how Dewey was watching, you know, Gail on TV, you know, still kind of like enjoying, like it's his favorite show.
Okay, they even went meta with the relationship between Dewey and Gail a little bit. I mean, you know, Courtney Cox and David Arquette, you know, have split. It was interesting to see them on screen together, kind of sort of falling in love again. That was kind of cool. But let's go ahead and talk about the big spoiler that Charlie was talking about. One of the big developments in this film, you know, the trinity of characters in any Scream movie, Gail Weathers, Sydney, and Dewey, they were back, but they won't be back for the next one. So Dewey, Officer Dewey, Sheriff Dewey, this was his swan song. He was out. And I was with a group of people, some hardcore Scream fans. And I just got to tell you, a lot of people, we understand the reasoning behind this, but not okay that this happened. So I just, let me just throw it. Dewey was killed. Dewey was killed in the middle of the movie. And I guess it was the only way to get Sydney back. She was avoiding returning home. And so maybe this is just the only way to get Sydney home. What do you guys think about the Dewey development?
I had a feeling it was going to happen just from seeing that trailer. There's the shot of him walking down the hallway in the hospital, and they have this like heroic shot of him shooting the gun. I'm like, oh, they're going to kill him. He's going to have this. He's going to have this like awesome scene. And then, of course, as the movie's going on, he fights Ghostface, shoots him, and then goes. And they're all going to leave in the elevator. He's like, I got to go back. I'm like, well, here it is. This is it. And then, of course, that's how it was. But to be fair, like I think he's had a fake out death in like almost every single movie.
Yeah.
Obviously the first one because he gets stabbed, but then I remember in the second one he gets messed up. But then in the third one, I think it was the third one, in the trailer they show him like holding the gun. There's like a knife flying at his head, and it ends up the handle hits his head. But I remember seeing that in the trailer back in the 20 whatever years ago, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna kill him. You know, then he's like, oh, he survived. So part of me was like, he'll survive, but then once they showed him like in the body bag, I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, South Park. They killed Kenny. They killed Dewey again. Yeah. But this time it looked like it took. I mean, was that necessary? I mean, Nate, I really want to know your opinion on this one. Was this a necessary development? Did they have to do that?
I love Dewey. I love all three characters. I would love to just live in a world where I know they're all okay. But I will say that, like, I mean, they've survived. All three of them have survived mass murder that's literally trying to kill all of them four times already. I remember
ability issue.
Yeah, I remember after Scream 4 was announced, I was like, oh, they're gonna kill one of them or all of them. Who knows? Because it's supposed to introduce us to a new generation of characters. And I knew that, like, Neve Campbell was hesitant to come back for even 4. And I was like, she'll probably only come back if she dies. So I kind of was, like, ready for it in Scream 4. I was ready for one of them to die. I kind of accepted, like, they're doing a fourth one after 11 years. They have to go big. One of them's going to die. And they didn't. And I remember being kind of like, I am happy that they all survived. But there's a part of me that's like, really, four times they survived. So I felt like this one, I was like, they have to. Somebody has to go. Like I said, I didn't want it to happen, but I think they made it work for the plot. I think he was in the movie just enough. I think that, like Jake said, pretty much as soon as he called Sydney and was like, under no circumstances, don't come back here, I was like, he's going to die and she's going to come back.
That's when I knew he was going to die too, right when he says that. Yeah,
it's interesting because, like I said earlier, I had just read the script. There's a part with the Dewey's death scene in the script. It's literally written when he gets stabbed in the stomach. They write something like, but we all just shrug it off and go, well, it's Dewey. He's going to survive this. And then it talks about the killer pulling the second knife out and stabbing him in the back. And I thought it was clever the way it's written in the script, where it's like, we're not worried, it's Dewey. He's a knife in the stomach.
Well, it gives it stakes, you know, and that was the midpoint, right? His destiny. Yeah. And that's a pretty important, just from like a structural standpoint, you know, midpoints in well-written movies, you raise the stakes. It's a big plot point and things are different after that and before. And so that to me just kind of, it gave weight. And then at the end, when you're rooting for our heroes to take out, you know, the bad guys, it's like, well, then it makes it more poetic, I think.
Right.
It was one of the most, it was, I think, probably the most, sad kills in the film, because they add also on top of that, him looking down and seeing that Gail is calling him, like his phone's lighting up and it's her. And it's like, you know, that's just like, oh, man.
Well, I don't like it.
What'd you say, Luke?
I don't like him being dead. Like
I don't either.
He definitely is like an unkillable character. Like you know, having his absence in it was such like a big thing, and like his quirkiness that he brought to, you know, the earlier films. Like he wasn't as quirky as he normally was in this one. He was a little more kind of aged and kind of defeated, but still strong. And all that, which, you know, it would have been good to see a little more of his humor again. But I mean, he'll definitely be missed, and, you know, it definitely will hurt going back and watching the other ones and being like, now he's going to eventually die anyways. And having that in your head when you go back and see the originals. But yeah. I wouldn't have done that, but I guess, you know, you got to kill one of them. But I probably out of the three, I wouldn't have put him at the number one killable one out of the three. If I was ordering him, I don't want any of them dead, but definitely not him.
No, I agree with you, Luke. He's the heart. Dewey gives the film the heart that it's always had. And do you feel like did they Luke Skywalker him? Last Jedi.
They Han Soloed him.
Yeah, I was
I mean, they give him a big death, but when you find out who the killers were, it's like, really? This another spoiler. Like this.
Well, wait. Let's talk about that.
Killed Dewey. You know, like really?
That was a thing I noticed. We talked about this also.
Watching
it, you know, they do, like all the movies do, a good job of faking you out and thinking like, okay, so you're watching. Oh, that guy, he's shady. I don't know. It could be him. But I was under the impression for a lot of the movie that it was, I forget the character's name, but Randy's nephew, the jock dude, the big football player. Cause they do the fake out where he's got the bruises on his arms. He's like, oh, I got the
football.
So Chad
was his character.
Yeah, Chad Meeks Martin.
Cause when you watch the movie in that, especially that scene, Ghostface, he looks like a tall dude in the costume. Mm-hmm. And then you find out later that that character, who it is, and you're like, that doesn't match up at all. Like, that's totally different body types and stuff. But
yeah.
But like, Jim, you notice something.
Four, when you have like 6'2" Dane Farwell and like Emma Roberts and Rory Culkin are like 5'1" in real life.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sure they thought, you know, most people won't notice it, but just like, wait a minute, like, you know, you go back and watch it again, especially now knowing, you know, going back, I'm sure watching it for a second time, you're like, yeah, that's a little
yeah.
off.
No, we were talking about that afterwards. I noticed, I was trying to find the, I was noticing there was, during the Dewey scene, Dewey was killed in the hospital, and it was a pretty, if it weren't Dewey, it'd be great, but it was a pretty dramatic scene. It was well done, but I noticed there was one spot, I thought I saw that they showed when Dewey was lying on the ground, you saw the, and Nate, I don't know if you noticed, it looked like they were wearing, platform shoes, the killer. It looked like it was really tall shoes, and I think maybe that was how they were trying to explain how.
It's possible. I know that the character that we were just talking about, the girl, I know that later in the film, when you see her as a character, she's wearing these like big platform, like Doc Martin boots. But I know that as far as like, you know, it's the stuntman that played Ghostface,
right?
He always wore like just kind of regular Doc Martens. But yeah, I'm sure they just were trying to add just a little bit of height, maybe.
Well, let's go ahead and give, okay, so if you're listening to this, we're going to talk about who the killers were, because this went back. It's to the original film, the two killers. It was Billy and Stu. So in this version, who were the killers, Cheeseman?
The two killers were...
Or Jake. Jake.
Amber and Dennis Quaid's son.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the characters. Richie Kirsch.
Richie Kirsch.
And yeah, played by Jack Quaid. He was one of the killers. And then also the other one was Amber Freeman, played by Mickey Madison.
Right. Okay. Right.
I knew when I'm watching the movie, we'll get into it. But, well, okay.
We're kind of running up out of time, so we got to get into everything here real quick.
Okay. Well, I was just saying, I was watching it, and I was like, I recognize her from something. I can't pinpoint. And then I looked it up, and she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yep,
and
yeah.
And in both movies, she gets completely set on fire.
I know.
She gets just engulfed in flames in both movies. That's really funny.
Yeah. And what Jake is talking about towards the end of the movie, the death scene, scene for Amber, she gets shot, or she eventually
She gets like hand sanitizer smashed on her face. Yeah. And then something happens. The stove gets turned on, and she gets like face, you know, falls onto the thing and just engulfs in flames.
Was it hand sanitizer?
Yeah, all the alcohol in the hand sanitizer.
Oh my gosh, you can't be more timely than that. I tell you what, getting doused by hand sanitizer.
And you know that because she says it, like it smashes. She's like, what is that, hand sanitizer? Yeah.
It was like a bottle of it, too. So
but the surprise, yeah, right. But the surprise in the movie, I guess, is that, yeah, again, not really a surprise, but there's two killers, but. Like I said, they got the whole family connection out of the way at the beginning. So they're really just fans of the Stab franchise who are, Randy Quaid. Randy Quaid. No. Dennis Quaid's son. Jack Quaid. It's his uncle. Randy Quaid's his uncle. Yeah. So they are doing this whole thing to revive the story so that they can revive the franchise, right? Make a new thing to base it off of, because they're mad at how the films have gone, and, you know, all the toxic fandom and all that stuff that everyone, you know, is all about.
Yep. So
that was the, I guess, surprise is that, yeah, that's an image. They were
almost saying it got, they even kind of like made fun of like Star Wars and all that. And they kind of
made
even
fun made of
Ghostface, sleeveless version of Ghostface for Stab 7. And they just really hated the direction things. And even kind of did a jab at Rian Johnson, how people claim he ruined Last Jedi, like whole toxic fandom thing.
Yeah.
Well, they even mentioned Rian Johnson, didn't they?
Yeah, they said he directed Stab 8.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard when they were doing that whole bit about the
because, you know, Star Wars Part 8 was directed by Rian Johnson. That was, to me, and me and Charlie, we just started laughing. That bit of meta commentary right there, like Star Wars and the Stab movies, that to me was probably one of the best 2 minutes of listening that I, in a movie I've heard in a long time, of explanation and exposition. They did it so great. It was so quick and bam, bam, bam.
I laughed so hard at the scene where they were showing the fans the podcast and stuff, because I, right before we saw the movie, had almost the exact same conversation with some friends. I'm like, why isn't it called Scream 5? It's what, Scream 1 through 4, and then it's like, why don't they do something clever or have like the M make like the point like a 5, like a V, like red color, and then they actually do, some guy's like, why are they calling it Stab again? Why are they calling it Stab 8? And they show the 8 like over the B, and I was like, that's the exact same thing. That's the exact same thing I said.
That is what they did so well with this one. So they had the two killers, which mirrored the first movie's two killers. But and we do have to kind of wrap things up here. Perhaps my favorite scene in the entire film, and it was, I was irritated at one point in the movie, because there's a scene where Sydney and Gail, they're in a car. They're trying to help figure out what's going on, and they're driving. They call the two sisters who are in a car with Jack Quaid's character. So anyway,
Sam.
They call Sam. Okay. Yeah. And Sam is, let me see. Sam was the one who was almost killed at the beginning of the movie, right?
No, that was her sister.
That's
right. Sam and Tara are sisters. They're in a car, and the boyfriend, played by Jack Quaid. We call him Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid looks
Richie.
I know. They're leaving town. We're getting away. But then the little sister Tara, she has asthma, and so she goes, I don't have my asthma inhaler. And they said, well, we don't. Where's it at? Well, I've got one over at, is it Amber's house, right?
Amber's house.
Mm-hmm. So they go over to Amber's house, and this is the part that bugged me a little bit, but it turned into my favorite scene in the movie. They go over to Amber's house. They just so happen to be having a party. There's mass killings going on around town, and a party is erupting. What, Luke?
But this party was for the character that died, whose name was Wes. So within this was their kind of love letter to Wes, is that they're, the friend of theirs was lost, but they're going to have a party on behalf of Wes. And it was like a party for Wes, which kind of had this deeper.
They got to like post on screen, this is for Wes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wes Craven.
That's cool.
Yeah. But so that's when at first I was like, then the boyfriend, then they hung out. I thought they were just there to get the inhaler, but they decided to hang out, and they kicked everybody else out of the house. And the boyfriend said like, oh, well, beer? You got beer downstairs? Let me go get some. I was like, wait a second. What are you doing? You're on your way out of town, and all of a sudden, we're going to start having a party. Until, and this was the best thing, when Neve Campbell is talking to Sam on the phone and says, you got to get out of there. And Sydney had put a tracker on the car, so she knew exactly where the car was at. And Sam goes, why? Why do we got to get out of here from the house she was at? And this is it. This is my favorite scene when she goes, you're in the same house. You're in this. Whose house was this again? It was
Stu's house.
You're in Stu's house where the original murders all took place. Yeah. And this was so great when the camera kind of focused on the house, focused on the staircase, and the audience, our audience all started clapping like, they did that so well. That was
cool.
The way they did that. Oh man. So, Nate, let me ask you. Apparently, they didn't film this in the original, the same house, right?
They had to build it because they shot in North Carolina, and to get like the tax credit, you have to film the entire movie there. So they, basically just rebuild it.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
How much of the house did they build?
I think half of it. One of my main issues with the film was that they're going to get beer, and all these scenes are taking place in the basement. Not only is there no basement in Stu's house, like in real life, but why? I don't see why those scenes didn't take place in the garage. Like, that's where they were getting beer from in the original.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe there's a reason behind it, but I just felt like, with the exception of like that, the kitchen and that the front of the house, the garage is the most iconic location there.
Yep.
And they never show it. They just invented a basement that doesn't even exist. And I'm still like, why? Why did you create a basement when there isn't? Yeah.
Like, recreate that doggy door that you can just glance over at, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. What, Nate, you said you read the script too. And are there any differences in the script and the final film?
Most of them are minuscule, like dialogue differences. The biggest difference was that in the script, Dewey is actually first introduced in the bar scene. He's shown at the bar, like, drinking drunk while the kids are in, like, the pool hall area. And he actually tries to break up the fight between Vince and Chad. And Vince ends up punching Dewey. They get into a scuffle. And then after Vince is killed, there's another scene that is not in the film where it's at the police station and Deputy Hicks actually has Dewey and is interviewing him as like, well, where were you? You know, Vince is dead and we saw you. So he was kind of like shown as a suspect because he gets into a fight with this guy and then he's killed. Those are the two main things that are different. Everything else is almost.
I like that.
Yeah, that would have been good. Yeah.
If they were to cast Dewey as a suspect, that would have been awesome. Instead of a victim. But anyways. go ahead, Luke.
So that Vince character, like I was looking into some stuff online about the movie and all that. So the character Vince, the guy that was killed outside, that kind of creeper stalker guy, was he related to I heard he was Stu's cousin or something. I might have barely missed it during the film or something, but
yeah, it's just kind of briefly mentioned in the film, but in the script they kind of specifically say like he's Stu's sister's kid.
Yeah.
So apparently Stu has a sister.
Which I love that, and I wish they would have played more kind of with that, and especially, you know, like having somebody related to Billy and Stu, if there was some sort of face off against the two of them or teaming up, I just feel like that would have been brilliant.
Mm-hmm. What about this? What about the death of Deputy Hicks and her son? That was
pretty brutal.
Like, where are the police?
I know.
She's calling. She's going back to the house and she's like, I need backup. And then it's like, they don't show up for like 30 minutes. I don't know.
They never showed up.
Until the next scene. And then they're taping off the place and everything. But that to me was kind of silly. Like, I was kind of like, okay. Like, why aren't they getting there sooner? It seems kind of.
I thought it was shot really well, though. I thought that scene was filmed really well. It was really tense. All the fake outs. Every time he thought,
that was fun.
They got me with four of them, and I'm like, oh my God, like, is he there or isn't he? I was starting to get nervous. And
when Wes is in the kitchen, that was a really good scene in the different fake outs. I enjoyed that.
It was great the way that they were trying to, like, do the Psycho scene. You know, that it was an homage to Psycho, the shower scene.
Yeah.
So it would have made sense for him to be killed in the shower, but no, they kept on doing the fake out and stuff. I think
that scene got, I think, the biggest reaction of the whole movie when I saw it in the theater, when the knife was in the neck, everyone was just like, and it comes out. That's like,
that
was like new Halloween.
That was brutal.
Yeah. And Judy just dying in broad daylight like that. It reminded me of like Randy's death scene in 2. Yeah. It's just like, you don't expect something like that to happen in the daytime. And then boom, Ghostface is right there, right outside in the neighborhood, just stabbing her on the sidewalk.
Well, guys, we are kind of coming up to the end. I want to make sure that we have covered the biggest parts of the film. We've covered the cast somewhat. What was the biggest? Is there anything we have missed discussing right now in the film? Like, we've talked a little bit about the setting. Did the setting made sense?
Did we clearly talk about who the killers were? Because we were guessing. I guessed before the end of the movie that Amber was one of them.
I didn't see
Richie being one. And that was the one most people got, which was kind of funny. Because, like, to me, I thought it was too obvious. And so I was like, oh, they're not going to do that. But no, he turned out to be one too. So
yeah, they kind of did what they did in the original, where Billy, you suspect him, but then they fake you out. So you're like, oh, it's not him. Because then they do the fake death for him. And then all of a sudden he's back. You're like, whoa. You know, they did like a whole turnaround. So that.
Yeah. It's like the rock, paper, scissors thing where it's like, oh, you've used scissors twice now. And right. It's like, you got me.
They did a really good job with Richie of convincing you that it wasn't him until it was. And then it was like, shit. Yeah. Okay, that was completely
wrong. Yeah. And it makes sense that to me there was a lot of good logical consistency because like her them being able to get Tara's phone cloned and do all that, well, obviously Amber would have had access to that. Mm-hmm. So it's like none of that felt contrived to me. So I really appreciated it just from a writing perspective.
Let me ask you about this. What about Sam? Sam Carpenter. Does she make a very good new Sydney?
I liked her.
Yeah.
Well, I liked her. Yeah, but is she? Do you think she'll be carrying the franchise going forward if the franchise does move forward? Remember what they said. It's not Halloween without Jamie Lee Curtis.
But it's like they almost set her up to be the bad guy at the end. It's like don't f with the serial killer's daughter.
Yeah,
I was gonna say
she just goes to town on Richie. You know. And I was like, are they going to play her with her being bad or something?
Right,
still that the ghost of her father, so to speak.
I think that was the most interesting moment for her and the most interesting she seemed after that. Like, I wish besides her just seeing her dad, I wish we could have seen her battle with her sanity a little more just on a personal level and not just like, I see visions of my dad, but she became much more of an interesting character right at the end once she hit that moment where she kind of broke that threshold.
They made Billy into like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's just like showing up and like, like the knife.
Somebody earlier today had pointed out to me that in the first Scream, Billy has that conversation with Sydney where he brings up Silence of the Lambs about how Jodie Foster keeps seeing visions of her dead father.
Oh, yeah.
And then in this one, Sam seeing visions of her dead father, which is
interesting.
I was like, I don't know if that was intentional, but that's pretty cool that the person noticed that.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. So as we do wrap up, where do you think Scream goes from here? Do you think Sam's going to be the next killer or the next Sydney?
Yeah. Like to me, it would. That's a really good question. They can't keep doing the same thing, can they? So, I mean, maybe they can.
They have been good at giving us something new and different each time, like,
but it's the same similar.
But I remember like after Scream 3 I was like, okay, yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of Scream 3, but I'm like, okay, that wraps everything up nice, we're good, we don't need to do it. Then they announced Scream 4 and I'm like, well, what are they gonna do now? And then like, oh, okay, interesting. And then the same thing with the new one. So, you know, I'm on board. I'll see as many as they make, you know, but it's like, yeah, I wonder where they're going to go from here.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them go kind of after Sydney's family. Cause we talked about, you know, like how Patrick Dempsey's characters like within this thing, but they didn't show him or she has these kids, you know, like I think if you make it really personal to Sydney, like I'd like to see her step up, you know, like she has, you know, to a Jamie Lee level to like where she has been doing that already. But I think if they use more of that, and there's also, you know, like Stu has a sister out there and there's other people all kind of like connected, you know, with all the family generational stuff, I think they could really kind of play more into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this movie was supposed to, from what I understand, come out. Was it supposed to come out last year? Because it was basically, it's the 25th anniversary of the film. And so that was kind of a cool, like 25 years later, where is Woodsboro now? I thought that was kind of cool. But as we wrap up, if we were to rank this in the pantheon of Scream, slash Stab movies, where does it rank? Where does this rank? Personally, Nate, where does it rank for you?
Right now it's right after 2 for me. Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 5,
yep,
and then 4 and 3. But I think it could potentially grow on me even more and take over 2. It could be just as, you know, right underneath the first one.
Charlie, do you have an opinion?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I still think 2 is better. But I would say it's probably third for me as well.
Cheeseman, what about you?
I'm in a podcast right now.
I would say definitely, first one right as of now. I like Scream 2 more. I'm very interested to see this again, especially after talking about it and looking at stuff online. I'm really interested to watch it again, see how I feel that one. Then I would say Scary Movie, with the parody. Yeah. Would definitely be, the next
one. Don't forget The Real Scream, the movie that we made in high school.
The Real Scream that me and Jake made in high school.
We called it The Real Scream.
And then this movie, and then, the 3 and 4, yeah.
All right, Jake, what do you think? Mr. Scream expert.
I'm not an expert, but I'm just a fan. Pretty much the same. I mean, one obviously is the best. Two is really good. It's not as good as the first one, but it was really well written and very clever. Three, I had a lot of issues with, and it became too jokey. Like, there's a Jay and Silent Bob cameo in it, which, I love Kevin Smith and Jay and Silent Bob. I'm like, what are they doing? This doesn't belong in a Scream movie. I remember liking four. I think I only saw it like once, when it first came out. So my memory on that one isn't as good as the other ones. So yeah, I think I'd probably go 1, 2, 5, 4, 3 also.
I think I'm right there with you. So, guys, I'm just glad we got more Scream. This is cool. Hey, Nate, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Hey, everybody, thank you for joining the Scare Guy tonight. Make sure you follow us at thescareguy.com or on our Instagram, The Scare Guy, or on Twitter, The Scare Guy. Let's go around the room real quick. We'll end with Luke. We'll start with Charlie. Tell us where people can find you or find out what you're working on.
Yeah. Well, you can find me on IMDb, Charlie Hoover. I spell it L-E-Y instead of I-E. I'm also on Instagram. You can follow me there. My YouTube channel is called Urban Owl Entertainment if you want to check out some of my filmmaking. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Jake.
You can find me on Instagram at the Jacoba System and also occasionally a guest on the Con Guy and Scare Guy. So.
Always glad to have you. Nate, thank you so much. Where can people find out what's coming up for you?
Yeah. So Instagram, I think my Instagram is just my name. I think it's just Nate Reagan. My YouTube channel is Reagan Productions. I do a lot of videos about like the props and stuff like that. Not just Scream. I do all sorts of stuff. And then massymedia.com. Could kind of check up and see any events or anything that Anthony and I are working on together.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cheeseman, take us out.
Did you say yourself? Bye-bye.
Yeah, I apologize. You can follow me on Instagram at James D. Fry or on Twitter at Jim Fry LA or just right here at The Scare Guy. All right, Cheeseman.
And I want to give a shout out to our friends Monster Tees. They've done some really cool Scream shirts and a lot of Stab stuff recently. I'm just going to real quick show you just a few of their designs, but they have they do hoodies, tank tops of these designs that they have. But if you go to Monster Tees, TEASE.com, they got a lot of cool stuff and probably a lot more to come. I'm ready for a Stab movie. I don't know about you guys, but I think whether fan made or whether they actually do it, I'm ready for a Stab movie. I know a lot of us were just, I want some stew. I want some stew back, but I'm excited to see what's about to happen. And you can find me on thescareguy.com and also on our social medias or me personally at Cheese on Couch. And, keep watching the Scream movies, keep supporting, and hopefully we'll get more.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll see everybody next time. Bye-bye.